Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to cold and wintry Cape Town, but I believe the sun will be shining. Let me take this opportunity of saying welcome to Honorable Sinclair, Madikhali, Honorable Abrams. Some of our members will join us as they are still in a WAPRI meeting, and also to the IDC delegation, as well as the delegation from the Department of Economic Development, Mr. Shakil Mir, who is the Regional Executive, Corporate and Strategy and Portfolio Management. Welcome, Shakil. Mr. Rian Kutsia, SBU Head. Now, what is SBU Head stand for? Oh, Strategic Business Unit. Agro Industries. Welcome, Mr. Kutsia. Pete Parnos, I don't see him yet. Okay, he's got an apology. Mr. Peter Williams from the Department of Economic Development, Mr. Duma Nkosi from Department of Economic Development, and then the lady there next to Mr. Nkosi, you are? HSRC. Oh, Human Science Research Council. That's correct. Excuse me, it's cold. So please forgive us for... And our friend from PMG, welcome. We are awaiting our tea trolley, but I think in the meantime we can start. As such, we take the briefing because I'm afraid that there is so much critical information on this briefing that really we don't want to run out of time. Also, let me put in my apology for the Minister Ibrahim Patel, who's meeting with the President on the Presidential Infrastructure Task Team, as he has said to us in the committee that he's also the Secretariat for the PIC, Presidential Infrastructure Committee, and they are meeting this morning. So the apologies for the Minister. Also, the apologies for the CEO, Mr. Jeffrey Kleiner. Mr. Jeffrey Kleiner, is he in Joburg, Johannesburg? Oh, he's in Tanzania. Okay. He's in Tanzania, so Honorable Sinclair, it wouldn't be wise for him to take a flight, to come and brief you and take a flight back again. Then we're just afraid you will criticize him for wasteful expenditure. His apology has been accepted. You can tell him that, Mr. Lee, Mr. Mir. Honorable members, our agenda for today, it is a briefing on the by the IDC, Industrial Development Corporation, on the strategic plan, the annual operation plan, the job sector and the green economy, and funding of projects per provinces. As we know, the National Council is Parliament. Let me start. Parliament consists of two houses, which is the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces. And, you know, people always make this mistake to say, I've briefed Parliament. And then we ask them, but which Parliament have you briefed? Because you haven't been to the NCOP to say that you've briefed Parliament. That is how our constitution was written. And the parliament consists of two houses. So the National Council of Provinces, we represent provincial interests in the national sphere of government. We look after our provinces, and also, you know, SALGA, local government, has got a say in the National Council of Provinces. We also look after our local government, and although they are an autonomous sphere of government, but they're also represented in the NCOP. So that is part of our work. And as economic development is a Schedule 4 function, it's going to be tagged as Schedule 4 ministry and function, we do also represents our provincial interest in the committee. Let me also welcome Honorable Dennis Kamede from KZN, and his entourage who has just walked in. In particular, a big entourage, bigger than the president. Mangohung is coming, so just wondering what's going to happen. Baba Kamere, but welcome, Honorable Kamere. And so with that in mind, I see our keys here and stuff, as we don't want our presenters to be disturbed. So let's just break for 5 minutes, grab your tea and some refreshments, members, and then after that we can start, Mr. Mayor, so that you can have your session and have your time, and then time is yours, and we are here up until 1 o'clock, 12:30 for the latest, so it's in your domain, if you don't mind. So we can break for 5 minutes, and please, Mr. Mayor, as I said, our hospitality, and enjoyed some of our refreshments with us. So, that really makes a person proud to say that the visitors has also come and share with us. But be that as it may, we will now give over to Mr. Mayor. Or Mr. Williams, before we do that, is there something from the department side that you would love to share with us? Or? Let me give over to Mr. Mayor to take us through the presentation, members. Sorry, the other apology is for Honorable Van Lingen, who is also out of the country. Honorable Abrams, is that correct? Yeah, she's also out of the country on family business. Yeah.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members of the Committee. Apologies once again for CEO not being able to attend. What I'm going to do is give a brief overview of our plans for the next 3 years, focusing a bit more on the next year. Together with that, as requested, I'll give a bit of an indication of how investments have been spread across the different provinces and touch a bit on the green economy. I'll talk through a number of different strategies in different sectors, but I'll spend a little more time in terms of the green economy specifically. I'm not going to spend a long time on this slide because this is talking fairly broadly in terms of IDC's objectives, and they haven't changed from previously. Maybe one thing which I haven't previously focused on with this committee is our values. As you know, we're here to support industrial capacity development to help develop key sectors across the country and across the continent. And when we try and do that, we look at three values: passion, professionalism, and partnership. And what that means to us is we want our people to care about what they're doing, about making a difference, about the development, and about the people that will impact on. But to do it in a very professional manner, when they deal with other companies, when they deal with businesses, when they deal with other institutions, even in their internal dealings. And we know that we can't do things on our own. We've got various partnerships. We work through our clients. We work with communities. We work with government. And so partnerships are core to the way we need to operate. From last year, we came up with a strategy which we call Leadership in Industrial Development, which has basically four pillars. It was a 3 to 5 year strategy, so there haven't been any substantial changes in the new strategy and in the new corporate plan that we have presented. Let me talk through the four pillars. Firstly, in terms of industrial development, which is the core of our business, we've realigned our operations to make sure that we are one of the key drivers of industrial policy and the new growth path in the country. So we've moved out of some sectors which weren't aligned and grown our involvement and, in fact, created new involvement in some areas, for example, the green sectors, which are focuses, for example, of the new growth path. In fact, it's more than just aligning ourselves in broad terms with these strategies and policies. If we say we want to be drivers, then we need to be extremely proactive in project development. And that's something which we have started doing, and we want to increasingly over the next few years focus on. We will continue taking applications from people, and that we do play a valuable role in terms of providing finance. But we increasingly want to say that what are the key interventions that need to be made in the country to unlock value chains, to unlock sectors, to unlock regions, and then proactively try and develop projects to make that difference. As I mentioned, the industrial finance is our main tool, and we will do it both with projects we develop and with applications we get, and we'll use our full range of products. We are a sector-based organization, and that is one of our key strengths. We try and, for example, Rian here is, as mentioned, from our agro-industries business unit. So within his team, there would be a depth of knowledge and a contact base within the agriculture and manufacturing related to the agriculture sectors. And that allows us to actually understand our clients, understand the needs, and develop appropriate strategies, which then link the industrial policy and the new growth path to what's happening on the ground. One of the relatively new areas we're focusing on is regional industrial integration. For a number of years, we've been investing in the African continent. What we have decided to do, together with in line with the new industrial policy as well, is to focus increasingly on regional industrial integration. We need to see ourselves as part of the continent, in particular as part of SADC. There are opportunities where if we start looking across borders, where there might be strengths in some regions and there might be benefits that we can get as well as benefiting some of our neighboring countries, for us to develop value chains which will have a significant impact. One of the things that we realized is that we are essentially a financier, a development financier, but we won't achieve our goals without the right environment. And a big part of that environment is our key stakeholders and our shareholder, the government. To help make sure that we achieve the objectives of the new growth path, we want to increasingly play a proactive role in influencing policy. And together with that, identify things which are impeding industrial development, things which are making it difficult for businesses to operate or which are making it difficult for us to develop projects. And it helps in terms of our reporting line into economic development, because this fits extremely well into their coordinating role. So we're increasingly working very closely with economic development and other ministries and departments in terms of trying to see what inputs we can make, given our unique role in that we operate in the private sector, but we are driven by development and we're driven by government policy. So we have both sides of the picture, and we can play an important bridging role and feed information. One of the other key elements of the enabling environment is the way we work with other development finance institutions and, in fact, other government and non-government organizations. If we are going to be maintaining our focus on industrial capacity development, there need to be other institutions, other development finance institutions specifically, which fill the gap in some of the other areas, and that we work together in terms of providing a network of solutions to the country. One of the key examples of that in the last year is our engagement with the Small Enterprise Finance Agency, which has now been set up as a subsidiary of the IDC, which will then allow them to focus on small business while we focus on the core role of industrial capacity development. But it's a lot wider than this. We're also working with a number of provincial as well as national DFIs like NEF and so on. We also increasingly working with organizations like Eskom, Transnet, and so on, to make sure that there's a the South African government family, if I can put it that way, works together in delivery, with each having its areas of expertise. For us to have the type of impact that we want to have, and we'd like to have a much bigger impact even than we've had in the past, we need to make sure that we are focused, but also that we fund our investments appropriately. Our levels of investment are growing. Since we decided on the strategy, there has been growth, and we expect it to continue to be growing. We will be releasing our results in the next few months, and then it will become clear that we have continued our growth path. But for us to make those investments, we need to make sure that we access money appropriately, that we access money at as low a cost as possible so we can pass on the benefits of that. We need to look at how we cross-subsidize some of our investments for our equities, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. We've also launched some customized funding schemes. Some of them, as you'd recall, we launched last year. It was announced in the President's State of the Nation address, something a jobs fund, a GROW-E fund, to try and encourage investment in businesses which will create employment. But there have been a number of other initiatives as well. For example, one of the things, if you look in the green industries, we've raised funding from the KfW, the German DFI, at extremely competitive rates, which we can then pass on to companies which are involved with increasing the energy efficiency. Now, I mentioned earlier that we work through our clients. Customer service is therefore absolutely critical to what we do. It's something that we've been working on for a while, but I don't think we've got there yet. I think there's still areas of improvement. One of the areas that we have been working on quite diligently in the last year is trying to improve our turnaround times in terms of our service to customers. Now, it must be recognized that some of the things we do, as we do some of these projects ourselves, some of these do take a very long period. But there are other things where they walk in through the door, and if everything is in place, we have all the right information, then it's something we should be able to do extremely quickly. But overall, we're putting a lot of attention on trying to provide better service, do it as efficiently as possible, try and save costs where possible. But together with that, the environment is increasingly becoming a focus area. Now, that's in two ways. One is in terms of our focus on green industries, trying to make sure that we use, for example, renewables. I mentioned energy efficiency, but in a number of other areas. But it's also in terms of trying to change the way we do business and trying to change the way all our clients, whatever sector they're in, do business. And through these initiatives, we want to be the primary driving force of commercially sustainable industrial development and innovation. With a primary focus on South Africa, but as I mentioned, for us to benefit optimally, we need to recognize that we're part of the African continent. I'm not going to dwell on this slide. I've spoken through the key issues there. But maybe to talk a bit more through what we've been doing in some of the provinces. The slide talks to what we've been doing over a period as well as in the last financial year. It's important to show a longer period as well, because if you look at an annual basis, you tend to have fluctuations because our investments are driven by the projects we're driving and the specific opportunities. So on a year-to-year basis, there is a substantial fluctuation. What gets interesting when you look at this type of analysis, that the types of investments that we make in different regions can vary quite substantially, and it really comes down to what the strengths of the different provinces are. So to some extent, we follow where the competitive advantage is, and to some extent, we try and look for opportunities to unlock value in some of these provinces as well. So for example, in KwaZulu-Natal, we've been putting a lot of funding and effort into clothing and textiles. Areas like fabricated metals as well has been quite, we've had a lot of activity. Limpopo has tended to be more chemicals and agro-processing. Gauteng, the more industrial-based sectors. The Western Cape has seen a range from clothing and textiles to some of the manufacturing and agriculture, and pharmaceuticals as well. The Northwest automotive components, agro-processing, and a very significant part of our activity in the Northwest is mining. In particular, we've seen a lot of growth in areas like platinum. And we're actively trying to build a platinum value chain or strengthen the platinum value chain in the country. Areas like Mpumalanga, forestry has been a major area of investment and wood processing. The Northern Cape, which is a relatively, and you'll see that in my next slide, even though it's a relatively small economy, has been a major area of investment for us and a large number of jobs there as well. And a lot of that is in agro-processing, mining processing. In the last year, there's been growth in the Northern Cape in terms of generation, in particular around solar. The Eastern Cape, it ranges from automotive components through to green industries. There's even been, interestingly, some advanced manufacturing in the Eastern Cape. One of the areas that we face a challenge, in fact, is the Free State, where it's a very agriculture-based economy, and IDC doesn't focus specifically on agriculture. Having said that, it's an area where we want to grow through looking at agro-processing. And if we look at this next slide, this talks about the type of funding we've done relative to the size of the provincial GDP. We find it makes an interesting way of looking at it to give us an idea, are we relatively over or underinvested relative to the economy? And we can see that a level of 1 shows that we are in par with the economy as a whole. So what this is telling us that the three areas which are regarded as the most industrially developed, Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, and Western Cape, which are the areas you'd expect us to have the highest level of relative investment if we are purely following the levels of investment, are all below 1. I mentioned the Northern Cape where we're quite high, the Northwest and Eastern Cape. Where we've got a significant challenge is in the Free State. It's, as I mentioned, it's due to the type of economy that they have there. But it's an area, and I'll talk a little bit more about what we're trying to do about agro-processing going forward, which will assist us in helping to change that picture. In terms of our impact on jobs, if you look over the last number of years, there has been a generally growing trend in terms of job impact. But if you start looking post-2008, as the economic crisis hit, we saw a bit of a decline coming in, but we've since recovered and we've actually started growing again, actually higher than historical levels. But what's particularly interesting here, if you look at the saved jobs, which are shown in red on the presentation, those have been growing in relative terms as the economic crisis has hit. We, to some extent, took a strategic decision as the economic crisis hit, in line with the national framework to deal with the economic crisis, that we will support companies in distress, and we've been making funds available to help companies in distress as a result of the economic crisis. And that's one of the main reasons that we've seen the impact on jobs saved increasing. But it's even wider than that, because what we've found is that a number of the companies that we've invested in previously, and we take equity in a number of these companies, they've run into trouble, and they've required our support to survive and actually help them to turn around. the 2012 year that I've shown here, in fact, what I'm showing you is a draft. We're still going through our audit processes, but hopefully further during the year, once we release our results, we'll have the opportunity to present them to the committee. But I thought it would be interesting to show you that, even if it is in a draft form, that the turnaround we saw in 2011 looks to be sustained, and in fact, we actually seem to be growing our impact. In terms of our focus areas for the next year by sector, what we've listed here is all the sectors, the business units that we've got, and I'll just talk through a few of them, and after that I'll highlight some of the specific strategies that we're following in some of these business units. I presented to this committee, I think it was about 2 years ago, talking about energy and green energy. And at that time, we said that we see ourselves having a significant influence or impact in the sector and growing our level of involvement. In fact, we're coming from a virtually zero base. In fact, in the next year, we're looking at allocating probably about a fifth of our total funding into green industries. So it's becoming extremely significant to us. And I'll talk in one of my later slides in terms of where we've seen the growth in the last year. The strategic high-impact projects, that, again, is a relatively new business unit. And what that focuses on is supporting industrial infrastructure, but also one of the, I mentioned our strength, is the fact that it's sector-based. But that creates its own weakness because some things cut across all of the sectors. So where there are projects that we want to drive, which cut across a number of different sectors, it gets driven within this business unit. So for example, we're looking here at trying to create a strong localized manufacturing of buses, trucks and taxis, trying to attract more international investment in manufacturing in those areas in South Africa, as well as looking together with that, which is something which touches on green, at can we use alternative energies for busing and so on. In the metals and machinery, one of the key focus areas going forward is going to be procurement into a number of different areas. We're aware of the massive investments planned in terms of infrastructure, and what we want to make sure is that as a country, we get maximum benefit out of it. So it's not only the infrastructure in itself which can benefit us by unlocking value, but if we can use that to actually strengthen our manufacturing base so we don't end up importing components for this. And a similar approach is being taken in terms of the green industries, where we want to focus on manufacturing as many components as possible locally. The automotive sector is something which, as we're moving from the Motor Industry Development Program to the ADP, the focus is increasingly going to be on components, and we want to play a key role in attracting investments in that area. Areas like chemicals, the focus is more on the midstream investments. We've got some very strong companies upstream in the sector, but we don't often see the benefits of that coming through to our manufacturers and to our smaller businesses. So we want to see if we can strengthen the intermediate level to make sure both that there's a clear value chain which benefits the country, as well as making sure that we produce as much as possible, as I mentioned earlier, for our infrastructure needs. An area which remains relatively large in our investments is mining and minerals beneficiation, but our focus there is increasingly shifting from mining per se. We are saying that when we do mining, we will do mining to the extent that it's required to support the junior mining sector. But we want to help build, as I mentioned earlier, these value chains in South Africa. We want to make sure that as a mineral-rich country, our local businesses get as much benefit as possible out of our natural resources. For example, in the area of steel or platinum, we want to make sure that we beneficiate as much as possible locally. We want to see competition in these sectors, and we want to see the benefits being passed through to the small and medium companies in the country. To mention one or two other areas which might be of particular interest, in the media and motion, we are fairly involved, we have been involved in terms of film production, but our focus has been shifting over time. Whereas historically we focused on supporting large initiatives, in a sense helping Hollywood to make films in South Africa on a large scale, our focus has shifted to South African stories, South African films, smaller budget films, and we're trying to build a significant scale of local media houses, production companies, which are telling South African stories for the South African market. And we've got some supporting strategies related to that. For example, we're piloting trying to bring back cinemas into the townships, and cinemas which are looking at modern technologies but relatively low cost to help develop the market. In the healthcare sector, we're looking at areas like hospital PPPs, pharmaceutical manufacturing on a local basis, and so on. To move on to the green industries, what this slide shows is a range of areas that we either are or want to become involved with. Our initial focus in the last year has been on renewable energy, and we've been extremely involved with the REFIT or the REAP process, where there's been a shift from on Eskom's side and from the country's side to move towards alternative forms of energy. And as you're aware, that has gone out to tender. We've participated in the first two rounds of the tender together with various partners, and I'll give you a little more information on our involvement in the last year in that area. But a particular note in this area is our involvement, besides our involvement in wind and solar, there have been very few projects that have been developed in terms of concentrated solar, and we've been involved in all of those. And that's an area that has been seen as relatively high risk because it's a newer technology, less developed than wind and solar. On the energy efficiency, it's cutting across, looking at trying to get businesses and buildings to increase their efficiency. We cooperate with Eskom, we work closely with the DTI. We look at, for example, in energy efficiency, we've been extremely involved in solar water heaters, trying to look at the local manufacturing and rollout. And in fact, we have been significantly successful in terms of the companies that we have funded have actually underpinned the expansion of that sector. In fact, we work together with a company which has ended up registering the first carbon program for low-cost solar in the world. And in fact, in the next few weeks, they will be exhibiting at the World Bank. They've been requested to take part in an exhibit. And there have been additional benefits through some of these interventions. For example, through the low-cost solar water heaters, a number of low-cost housing initiatives have actually, where people previously didn't have heated water at all, have now got not only geysers, but solar water geysers. I mentioned we've engaged with KfW. We've raised funding for businesses to invest in improving their industrial efficiency, and that funding, we pass on the benefits of the lower cost of funding to those businesses. In terms of transport efficiency, we're looking at, in particular, buses, possibly taxis, trying to see if we can move towards alternative forms, maybe gas, to power some of our vehicles, in particular public transport. That's a project which will take some time because there's a number of things which need to be put in place. Fuel-based energy, both waste-to-energy and cogeneration. We have done some investments, but we see major opportunities going forward. That also has a particular importance to us because there are opportunities to look at rural areas, there are opportunities to look at various provinces around the country to generate various projects to benefit from some of these areas. Biofuels, one of our key focus areas currently is bioethanol, where we have been developing a project in Cradock. We've brought it up to the stage where we are fairly comfortable that a commercial project can be done with the right support. And the next step is we need the right decisions made by government to put the enabling support mechanisms in place for us to take that project forward. One of the areas that we increasingly want to focus on going forward is emission and pollution mitigation. Historically, we haven't had a major involvement except in waste management. We are currently trying to get a few projects off the ground in terms of recycling and waste management. And clean stoves is an area where we see big opportunities. Again, not only because from an industrial perspective, but also from the impact it has on people's lives. Because some of these initiatives can replace, for example, some of the paraffin stoves that we have currently. What is extremely important when we look at our approach to green industries is if we want this sector to be successful, we have to look both upstream and downstream. So we need to make sure that the right services and support mechanisms are put in place to actually support the sector. But as I mentioned for infrastructure, exactly the same principle or approach we're taking here. What we want to do increasingly is see that we start manufacturing our components locally. We need to grow that sector so that we get as much benefit as possible from our local generation and so on. But also if we can utilize this appropriately, we might be able to set up an export base from South Africa in some of the green areas. In terms of renewable energy projects, that's been, as I mentioned, in the green arena, our major focus in the last year. There have been two rounds of bidding. The second round, in fact, the results were just announced about a week ago. Out of the two rounds of bidding in the last year and what was announced this year, out of the 47 renewable energy projects that have been announced as preferred bidder status, we've been involved with 18 of them. So as you can see, we're playing a fairly significant role. There is a good spread of our investments across the country, across the different provinces. One of the benefits of this type of generation, besides being green and so on, and meeting our energy needs, is that the areas which are extremely strong in terms of what we need, for example, in the Northern Cape, where we've got large areas of unused land and excellent sun, or the Eastern Cape, where we've got excellent wind, are areas which are relatively underdeveloped. And it's not only on a provincial basis, but these are being done in rural areas. So it's helping to bring economic activity into some of these areas. on a long-term basis, the job creation is relatively small, but on the construction basis, it creates opportunities. And as I mentioned, one of the things that we increasingly want to do is make sure that we increasingly manufacture the components locally. In the projects that we have supported, in fact, we've been approached by a lot more than these. A number of people wanted us to get involved. But we've tried to prioritize based on a few things. We've tended to support projects, and a lot of our funding has gone into supporting the local communities to take stakes in these businesses. We've also given preference to projects where there is a relatively high degree of local content. And like I said, in areas like concentrated solar, where it's regarded as a relatively high risk, there was a need for us to get more involved. So our intention is not to force out the private sector, but to work with the private sector, but to make sure that sufficient projects happen, we get the right spread, and that we try and move towards local content and involving our local communities. I touched earlier on our funding model, that we need to manage this carefully if we're going to achieve all the things that we need to achieve. So this is a key area of our strategy going forward. The way IDC funds itself, We've got a balance sheet which has been built up over time. We are self-funding, so we need to generate enough returns for us to be able to grow and to be able to take a high-risk profile, because the types of investments we make have a high probability of failing, a lot higher than a typical bank. So what we need to do is borrow funds on the market, which we can then pass on the benefits. One of the challenges which I spoke about there, or one of the opportunities, maybe I should put it that way, is that we can only lend as cheaply as we can borrow. So we need to keep trying to find cheaper sources of funding. We have had some success in that area, for example, through partnerships with the UIF, Unemployment Insurance Fund, where we haven't issued the bonds to them. We fully utilized the funds that they made available, and it was focused on job creation and saving jobs. And in fact, they've agreed and we've subscribed for a new bond so we can make more funds available. I mentioned our facility with KfW in Germany. We've managed to secure long-term funds from the China Development Bank. There's a number of areas where we're trying to find cheaper sources of funding. We've also been engaging with governments where we manage some funds on government's behalf. And in particular, one of the areas which is currently being put in place, as has been announced by the Minister of Finance, the President, and the Minister of Trade and Industry, in the manufacturing area, the MECP, through agreement with the DTI, we will be managing a portion of that funds. So there's a number of these initiatives where we're trying to reduce our cost of funding. There's one other area where we try and reduce our cost of funding, and that's, you'll see that we talk about the subsidy. We actually ring-fence some of our own funding where we've got specific initiatives. For example, I spoke about the 10 billion rand we allocated for job creation. We've also allocated funds for the clothing and textiles industry, to support shareholding by communities and by workers and so on. So there are ring-fence funds which we have set aside and that we are subsidizing. But what makes it possible for us to do some of these things? Because, quite frankly, on our loans, we are currently not making money. Because we are trying to pass on the benefit of the cost of our funding, we're taking a relatively high risk. And we're trying to invest in businesses which will have an impact. So So it's not businesses which have a proven track record. So we therefore need to cross-subsidize from our equities. And we do that through, when we make equity investments, and we make that again from a development perspective, not as a share trader, but over time, our equities grow in value, they mature, they start paying us dividends, and we exit. Now that strengthens our position so that we can, through our retained earnings, and through the capital growth we make in those investments, cross-subsidize some of our loan funding. One of the challenges that we keep needing to manage, we need to optimize, we need to invest in businesses that are sustainable, that will succeed, so will give us a financial and a development return. But we can't focus, if we end up focusing on the financial return, then we are not achieving our purpose. I mean, our vision, our objectives and so on are clear. We are a development institution. So we need to make sure that we focus our investments on the right things, which can give us a development impact, but which will be sustainable, and which, not just from a financial perspective, but also when we talk about creating jobs, it doesn't help us if the company fails and those jobs aren't created in the long term. In the next number of slides, I'll highlight some of the key strategies that we follow. What you'll see on the right-hand side next to each strategy is an indication of the provinces that we're focusing on for those particular strategies and where we expect the major impact to be. It doesn't mean that we won't look at some of the other provinces as well, but we'd like to focus on some of the areas that require a bigger impact, but also where, as I mentioned earlier, there are types of comparative advantages which we can leverage off to look there to make sure that the country as a whole benefits. To start off with agro-industries, we are not the land bank, although we work very closely with institutions like the land bank. So we are not an agriculture development organization, but we recognize that for us to impact on job creation, for us to impact on rural areas, we need to play a role. One of the big challenges which a number of the underdeveloped rural areas in particular are experiencing is that they don't have markets for their products. They struggle to generate prices, there's issues in terms of maintaining the quality, in terms of raising the finance, getting the expertise to actually make long-term investments, to generate income on a sustainable basis. And that forces them into subsistence agriculture. And we'd like to help break them out of that. And one of our key focuses, and one of the areas which we, in fact, growing our investments at, in fact, a higher rate than most other sectors, except for the green sector, which is also growing at a significant rate, is in terms of agro-industries, where we're looking at developing linkages. We want to create a strong agro-industries base in South Africa, and this is an area which, in fact, if there are further interests, in fact, Rian can talk even a bit more about it. But we're seeing it as an area where we can help in terms of import replacement, we can look at export generation, we can look at direct job creation in the agro-industries, but we can also impact significantly on rural areas across the country indirectly. One of the national priorities is infrastructure. Now, IDC is not primarily an infrastructure organization, we are an industrial capacity organization. Having said that, we work closely with the Development Bank of South Africa, but also with a number of other institutions. We're working extremely closely with the Presidential Committee, the PICC, in terms of helping to develop those plans. And we see a key role for ourselves going forward in infrastructure. One of the areas is, as I mentioned earlier, making sure there's localization. So when Transnet rolls out their rolling stock, we want to make sure that as much of that rolling stock is produced in South Africa as possible. When Eskom puts in place or procures transformers, we want to make sure that those are produced locally. The other areas, it's not just on these large-scale projects. If you look at what's been happening around our metro areas, and I touched on buses earlier, a lot of these buses that are being rolled out by government are being imported. Now, it's not something that we have. We've manufactured things before in the automotive industry. We've got the capacities. We need to bring back and strengthen some of those capacities within the country. So localization is an extremely important focus for us going forward. In terms of areas like taxis, trucks, and so on, in a similar way, it's not so much looking at government procurement, but we are, to a very large extent, importing our taxis and trucks. And we've identified opportunities for us to increasingly try and look at first in growing our local assembly, and then over time increasing our local components manufacturing in those areas as well. I've spoken to renewable energy and energy efficiency, so I won't dwell on this slide any longer. In terms of forestry and wood, our main focus going forward is going to be on developing rural forests. And when I say rural forests, let me put that in context, because obviously every forest is in a rural area. Firstly, we've realized as a country that if we continue down the path we're currently going, we're going to have a shortage of timber at some stage. The pressure was taken off in the last few years because of the economic crisis. Demand went down. But we haven't been investing enough in forestry. We've got large areas of land in the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal in particular, which are suitable for forestry. But those are areas which are owned by relatively poor communities who don't have the capacity to develop projects. They have financial capacity. They also don't have necessarily the expertise. It's also long-term investments. They don't have the markets. There are strong challenges in trying to develop some of these projects. So it's difficult enough for an established business when you have to look at water issues, environmental impact assessments, trying to find the right markets and so on in a fairly specialized area. It gets even more complicated if you're a community without resources. So we've made it one of our key focus areas to actually support some of those communities in developing projects. Now, it's not traditionally our role as an institution to give grants, except where we manage grants for government. In this case, we've made, in a sense, an exception, where we've actually allocated some grant funding to help these communities, because we can't see any other solution to unlock this significant value. And we've been working on this for the last 2 years, and we've started seeing now the first results starting to come through, where we have started seeing some community projects getting off the ground, and we hope to see that accelerate going forward. It's a difficult role. The amounts of money we're talking here, but very small amounts of money compared to some of the other investments, but in terms of the type of impact it has, it's very significant. The other area where we've been playing a growing role, and we want to see that role continuing, is the clothing and textile sector. Now, this is a sector, and in fact, if I recall right, once before when we presented this committee, the question was asked, are we throwing good money away in the sector? It's an extremely difficult sector. And if you look over a long period of time, the sector has been shrinking. We haven't been able to stay competitive with some of the international players, countries like China, Vietnam, Turkey, Bangladesh, and so on. But one of the challenges is that because the sector has experienced difficulty, the players in the sector haven't been investing, so which means they've been falling further and further behind. It's become a vicious cycle. So together with the DTI, we came up with a joint intervention to say, let's try and stabilize the sector, let's identify niches, and let's encourage the sector to invest in areas where they can be competitive. Now, for example, we're talking about things like we've been engaging with the local retailers about what's an area that we call fast fashion. So if a local retailer wants to get large-scale, very cheap products, they can probably get it from China a lot cheaper than it can be produced in South Africa. But if they want it on the shelves in a month's time or in 2 weeks' time because they've recognized a change in fashion, they want to change their product range, they want to change their colors, they can't do it on that basis. And the local retail industry is starting to buy into that concept. We've started seeing that local manufacturers, through the DTI grant, which we are managing, as well as through our funding, have started investing in equipment, have started investing in changing their production processes. And we're starting to see not necessarily a growth in the sector, but we're starting to see some stability. We're still seeing some companies going under, but we're seeing other companies maintaining their employment and some even growing. I don't want to leave the impression that we've resolved all the issues in the sector. I think we'll still have challenges going forward, but at least we're starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel. I mentioned earlier that we're looking at regional value chains, looking at some of our neighboring countries, how we can work more closely with them. And here's one example of an area where we're trying to develop a value chain. And I want to use as an example. So if we say, for example, that there might be some low-cost production that we can't compete currently with China, maybe if we start thinking differently as a region and we say, well, maybe in Zimbabwe we can be strong in cotton growing. Maybe in South Africa we can spin it. And maybe in Swaziland they can manufacture the clothing. And if we can together work together as a region, looking at our relative strengths, maybe we can identify areas that we can be competitive and benefit all of us collectively. In healthcare, as I mentioned, these are just examples of our strategies. We've got a few other strategies as well, but I'm highlighting some of the key ones. In healthcare, local pharmaceutical production we're seeing as an opportunity. From a policy perspective, we need to make sure there's security of supply for our healthcare sector. There's opportunities to impact on our balance of payments, create jobs. If we can get this right, we can leverage off some of our natural agricultural products over time, but we can also supply our public health sector locally. It makes us less dependent. For example, when there was a bird flu and there was a worldwide shortage of certain things, if we are producing some of our ingredients locally, it makes us less dependent. One of the challenges we're experiencing currently is that we're trying to develop new projects in these areas. They can be extremely expensive investments, and it can take an extremely long time to actually generate a return. We need to make sure that we put in place the right tender mechanisms that government does procure locally so that there is a market that does get generated over time. mining, I mentioned that it's traditionally been a large area of investment. Even though in relative terms we're growing the other areas, this is still a relatively large area, but our focus is shifting, as I mentioned, from the pure mining to say let's add as much value as possible locally. Let's try and impact on the downstream businesses. That's where the large numbers of jobs will be created. That's what will help make us competitive and sustain our competitiveness over a long period. Finally, in terms of our regional presence, over the last 3 to 4 years, we started the process of expanding our presence around the country. We've now got offices in every province. We have started opening branch offices in some areas, but even satellite offices. And these satellite offices are areas where, relatively smaller areas, where we then visit at regular intervals, so people know that we'll be there once a week, so it helps give people more access to us. We're never going to be the type of institution like a bank where we can have branches all over the country. We don't have the cost structure, we don't provide that day-to-day banking, but we have to find ways to make ourselves more accessible. We've made these different branches operational offices, and increasingly the initial assessments of businesses dealing with clients is happening out of these offices. We've also, with the Small Enterprise Finance Agency being formed, we're looking at how we can work more closely with them, because they need to have, in fact, it's more critical for them to be distributed as widely as possible around the country. So we're working very closely with them to say, as a starting point, can they share offices with us as they roll out? Can we utilize them so that people who want to apply to us through them, at least as a channel? We also work closely with organizations like CEDA, with some of the provincial organizations, to try and expand our network. The other thing example which isn't on here, it's not strictly a regional presence, but it enhances our accessibility. Something which we just recently launched, and it was part of the initiative also to improve our service to our clients, is an online application service. So people can log in via the internet, fill in an application online. There is some guidance there in terms of filling in a business plan. One of the challenges that people have, especially people starting a business or relatively small, inexperienced entrepreneurs, they feel they have to get in a consultant to a very fancy business plan to meet our needs. In our experience, well, a consultant can help, because entrepreneurs often have gaps. But in fact, very often, the businessman understands his business better himself. And what we want to know is, what does the businessman want to do? Does he understand his business? Does he have the skills and knowledge to make it a success? And through tools like this, we want to make it easier for people to just apply directly to us, rather than feeling they have to use a consultant. In fact, in our experience, they are excellent consultants, but there are some of the consultants who are selling a product which doesn't really add real value to the business plan. It just makes it look better. Sorry for knocking consultants. It wasn't the intention. Like I said, there are some excellent consultants. I think the point is more the consultants. We don't want people to feel that there's a barrier between for direct access to us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Klutter, is there anything you want to put here? Sorry. Anything you want to add on?
Not at this stage, thank you.
Not at this stage, okay. Honorable members, it is now time for questions. Clarity or questions that you want to put on towards the presentation. Honorable Kamere. Let me take it in that order. It's Honorable Bihali, Honorable Sinclair. Okay, in that order. Honorable Kamere.
Thanks, sir. I have a few comments and quite a lot of questions. If I get tired on the way, I'll stop. It'll be shorter. The first comment is that you must take on the message to the CEO that he still owes a public relations exercise in my constituents. It's long overdue. If you could give me a response within 7 days. ITC had actually supported four schools in my constituency with scientific things worth about 100,000 each. And there's never been a public exercise on that matter. I note also, I know Honorable Sinclair is going to speak, the comment, I note that for the first time I hear Northern Cape is over-investment in Northern Cape. For the first time I hear this, I think we should be taking some of the money to KwaZulu-Natal. The first question I have is, you know, if you look at the figures, and the things that we do, whether it's IDC as government and the public representatives, there's a lot of money that we put in. The question I have is, why do we still have poverty and unemployment? If we're doing so much, if you're doing so much in KwaZulu-Natal, and why do we have, we could be missing a point somewhere. Are we doing things that are going to solve our challenges? Which means that we know our problem, poverty and unemployment. We just need to mitigate them. I'm sure next time in the presentation we'll say, in KwaZulu-Natal, there were 100,000 people who were regarded as poor, were in the poverty line. Because of IDC, now there are 60,000. Next time I think we should have that so that we know that we really are working. The next one would be if you could supply areas where these things happen about clothing in KwaZulu-Natal. You know, on slide 5, he said he's doing some clothing in KwaZulu-Natal. At least you're going to a constituency period. I'd like to be visiting these areas where the ITC is saying he's doing something on clothing, on textiles. And in your response, you can unpack your hospital triple P's. Now, I'm not sure whether it was on slide 10, you had tourism there as part of the things that you do, but I saw nothing on tourism, you know, just like you did with other sectors, say you do this, automobile, this, but there's nothing on tourism. Maybe I missed it. On the issue of solar water geysers, I remember we went to the launch, the chairperson took us to a launch somewhere in Pretoria. Where do they actually come from? I remember when we went to Pretoria somewhere, they're not South African manufactured. Besides the fact that we'd want to get things manufactured in South Africa, I can't remember whether they were from North Korea or what, or South Korea. But the ones that we launched for the houses somewhere in Pretoria, they're not homegrown. The ones that we are doing, do we have the plans now, plans to manufacture these geysers? On your slide 11, the issue of the clean stoves. I always have an issue with the Department of Energy about this thing. They were never successful, you know. They were never sustainable before when we They issued those stoves to the municipalities as drinking stoves, but all of them now are lying not being used. What better are we going to do now with the clean stoves? China Development Bank, German funding, I'm always skeptical. He who pays the piper plays the tune. How do we protect that? Because if we need fund, once we get funders and donors and all that, and we are a nation of getting these things, where will we take the country to? I mean, China won't give us money. Last year, year before last, we were not happy about Standard Bank doing business and selling 20% of the shares, because we don't see the impact and the difference on the ground. So this, if you could unpack it, won't it jeopardize us? Now, on slide 14, earlier than slide 14, on one side you said that you don't concentrate mainly on agriculture. But then you come to slide 14, you say you want to be involved in agricultural projects. Which is which? This is what our people face on the ground. They say, they see IDC saying we want to get involved in agricultural products. They put in applications. After 6 weeks, 8 weeks, IDC replies, now we're not mainly concentrating on agricultural products. The issue of buses on slide 15, most of them come from Brazil. Got even the 2010 buses from Brazil. Now, do we have a plant on assembly? That if you want to do this, is this thing ready? And I'm sure if you have some plans to have an assembly or a plant, definitely it must be in KwaZulu-Natal, so that we manufacture this thing. On slide 17, about rural development and ensuring sufficient forest resources, the question I have is, who owns those forests? I don't see really the rural development part, because Mondi owns those forests. Siyaqhubeka owns those forests in rural areas. So on one hand, you're saying you're assisting in rural areas, but there are many workers at Mondi and so on. I would want to see a situation where IDC would assist the rural communities to own those forests. The last, I think, one is the example that you made about cotton in Zimbabwe. But I think your example defeats beneficiation. Wouldn't want to do that. Wouldn't want to plant cotton here, send it to Zimbabwe. There's no beneficiation, and then clothing is made in Swaziland. Maybe we should say we strengthen Zimbabwe with its cotton manufacturing, and whatever, we concentrate on where we are strong, even as a region. Lastly, in terms of our foreign policy, I'm sure it would be good if the IDC would identify key areas of economic interest, just like cotton in Zimbabwe, cocoa in West Africa, and line up these things and say, this is where our region is strong, this is where Africa is strong, then we just concentrate on those things. Thanks.
Honorable Khali, thank you,
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson Gamede has been acting as a father of this committee by covering almost all what we wanted to ask. But I just want to raise my voice again on slide number 7. I believe in distribution of, like, when the wealth has been distributed, at least all the provinces should be covered. But now I could see that the bulk of the money is going to Northern Cape. Maybe we can get clarity on that one. The others I'll just skip because they are already covered. And The other one is on slide number 19, where they say, in addition to regional offices, branch offices have been established in certain areas. I just want to know if ever there's monitoring on these offices, whether the officials are really doing their work, because people are suffering while these people who are operating these offices at least should just help them. But I don't know, they're not getting help, and they're saying in certain areas. I just want to know why in not all the areas. And again, on slide number 14, even if it's been touched, I just want to know how far is the program of solar heater, because I'm also looking forward to see this project being established in Limpopo, especially in the areas around Capricorn District, Sekukuni Venda, Giani, and Waterbeck. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kikali. Honorable Sinclair.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, every day has got new surprises. And I'm happy to see about the big investment in the Northern Cape. But I suppose it's not investment. I suppose it's maybe the impact that the investment might have. But Jefferson, coming from that province and on a daily basis seeing the poverty and unemployment of the people, I must say that I honestly believe that that statistics might be a bit misleading. I mean, if you start from a low base and you invest, then certainly you would get that type of scenarios and feedback and so on. But what I want the department, the IDC to do is to provide me with a list of the projects that the IDC is specifically involved. I know that there's many projects at the moment where they're involved, but I'm also aware of a number of projects that didn't go so well as anticipated, specifically regarding the agricultural side. So if I can, through the Secretariat, have a breakdown of the project where the IDC has been involved recently in the Northern Cape. But Chairperson, the IDC is a strategic tool. In terms of my understanding, it's got two elements. Firstly, naturally, the one about the strategic thinking. And I must compliment the IDC. I think, with due respect to the others, I think they're the best in South Africa in terms of my dealings with some of the other DFIs. Which brings me then to, and I'll speak about strategy just now, but which brings me to your partner. I must say, Chairperson, tomorrow we've got the DBSA and the NEF and all those lot there. But many days I can just shake my head in amazement on many levels. If I can just refer to the DBSA, and that's one of your partners, recently about the job fund, you know, how many people applied, turnaround times, then people come to the point to say no, but after 9 months, this is actually not the DBSA's mandate. The same with the NEF. You know, I'm dealing with applications there, or I've referred people and so on, and it's small amounts. It takes a year, 18 months, and so on. And many of this, Chairperson, has got to do with applications for rural areas. And that is where the poverty is. And our people don't get that benefit filtering down to them. It's too complex. I mean, at the end of the day, if somebody sits in a little town in the Karoo and must work through a consultant and travel 1,000 km to an office, which they come there and then this is not the right and that is not right and so on. So, I don't have a problem with IDC. I think they're wonderful. My problem is with their partners. Also, Chairperson, in terms of the commercial banks, and the one issue that Mr. Meer didn't speak on is the issue about the role of commercial banks. Now, I'm quite frank about it. The commercial banks in South Africa don't have any mandate in terms of developmental finance. For them, it's about the interest of and the interest of their shareholders, and they don't give, with due respect, a damn to developmental issues in South Africa. What I believe is if an institution like the IDC can play a bigger role in terms of motivating or giving guarantees to commercial banks, also to start playing in that specific environment. Which then brings me to the first specific issue, Chair, is in we didn't discuss the corporate plan, which I think we received part 6 last night. On page 9, can we, Chairperson, can we discuss the corporate plan?
Yeah.
Thank you. At some stage, there was reference regarding this small business funding entity which is established. And I see there's reference, Mr. Meer, on page 9 of your report on that one. So maybe you must give us clarity, because some of these entities that I've raised now, like the Kulas and the Samos and so on, are involved with that. How far is that specific plan regarding the implementation? That's page 9 of your corporate report. Your corporate plan. But Chairperson, then coming back to the strategy part of this department, the first issue that I want to raise is the capitalization of the entity. We know and we see that you're borrowing a lot of money on the open market, but wouldn't it be better if government, from a strategic perspective, recapitalized the institutions like they did, in, when was it, 1940, or can't remember exactly. Because many of the demands in terms of the challenges of our country is exactly filtering on that one. But then it brings me, Chairperson, to the reference that was made to the infrastructure. And I just recently, this morning, I saw that the FSC formally warned South Africa that despite this massive, almost 900 billion rand investment in infrastructure, it is not going to address the real issue of joblessness and unemployment. Now, we understand the strategic objective with that. I mean, you can't develop your economy if you don't have infrastructure. But it's necessary to have downstreaming, as you rightly say, Mr. Meer, in terms of this massive infrastructure investment. But of great concern is the FFC's remark about the impact that's going to have on the very essence of this matter, and that is how we're going to create jobs and grow the economy. Then, Chairperson, in terms of strategy, we currently the other committee, DTI, busy with a discussion about the IDZ. Now, the IDZ is supposed to be a very, very strategic instrument to also address issues like in the rural areas and so on and so forth. Nowhere in your presentation did I pick it up that you're speaking about your special economic zones and the IDZ. Now, I suppose you know that, but for the Northern Cape, for instance, there's a proposal that there must be two specific special economic zones in specific areas. The one revolving around your solar parks in Upington, and the other one regarding the R and the activities there and so on and so forth. So what is your viewpoint on this whole debate about the special economic zone? Then, Chair, on page 18 of your report of the corporate plan, those operationalization of projects approved in the past, there's about 8 or 10 of them. The one issue that I want to raise that you referred to is the beneficiation, specifically regarding minerals and mining and so on. Okay, I you know my viewpoint. I've got a very, very serious problem, a way that we address this issue. What I picked up there, Mr. Mia, is that the IDC supports beneficiation, for instance, at the port in Kucha or somewhere else, the manganese one there and so on. But my understanding of this matter is very simple. You must beneficiate at the source of the product. Why must you put the burden on the infrastructure to transfer millions of tons to a coast and beneficiate there? I don't understand the rationale behind it. It doesn't, in terms of my basic understanding, it doesn't make sense. The same with, for instance, grapes, Mr. Kutsia, or whatever agricultural project, meat or whatever. In Grobbelaarshoop in the Northern Cape, I think the IDC is there involved with a Karoo kit project or so, Kalahari kit project and so on. Beneficiate at source. So I don't understand the rationale. Why do you want to go and beneficiate at the coast? That is where you create jobs. So maybe you can also just explain on page 18 on that report and so on. Then the last issue, Chair, is the disaster funds. The Northern Cape, as you know, is now almost 2 years. The next floods are coming. But the disaster fund is now almost 2 years in December. Has not been paid out. What is the situation? And I know it's a partnership between the IDC and the Land Bank, and the provincial government is involved and so on. And I must say your official in the Northern Cape, Mr. Mahmoud Ahmed, is very supportive and is a very good official. And I think he's a bit overstretched, and I'm happy to see that you're opening an office in Upington. But once again, a turnaround time of 2 years, I mean, that's certainly not wrong. Thank you.
For that, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah, sorry, I'm late. I didn't get the presentation. However, there were issues I wanted to raise with IGC, even I didn't see the presentation. If that comes to the presentation, I think you'll forget the chairperson. As you know, I'm from a rural province, and there's only one flight on a day, or two flights. You miss a flight, and then you can't have another flight, especially on Mondays, which is conspiracy day. And you know, ANC, we do work after hours, so there's no flight thereafter. And always, we continue to work, you know, the following day will be later to work. So that's my apology, chairperson. Chairperson, I just want to find out from the IDC that, first of all, aren't they perhaps not doing their core business if they sponsor mining? Because the IDC has got some shares it holds in mining, of which I think the core business of IDC is to develop industries. We need to industrialize South Africa. But I see that you've got a lot of shares in mining and sponsoring in mining. So isn't that perhaps not the part of your core business? And secondly, Chairperson, as the Honorable Sinclair said, that you're borrowing a lot from the capital markets. I can be too technically. What do you base that on? No, what is your weighted average, your WACC, weighted average cost of capital? Do you evaluate the project according to your internal rate of return? At what percentage of internal rate of return that will approve the project? And return on equity, such issues. What your leverage is as such when you borrow the capital from outside. And lastly, Chairperson, we've got the small mining entities that if they mine, perhaps to beneficiate the minerals, they need to have smelters, they need to have other issues that a big business cannot afford, or rather, they cannot afford this big business. Won't it perhaps be possible for IDC to have one big smelter that will accommodate SMEs? Because if the SMEs take their products or their produce from the mines, like chromium and so forth, in order to benefit them, they need to go to smelters. But they can't afford that if they go to private smelters. Can't an IDC come up with a smelter where those problem is they can go there. Or a refinery, for in that case, if they import oil from other countries, they do that. Refinery, you know that storage is another hindrance for oil importers. Perhaps they have a storage for LNGs that they can store their what they import to be refined and then to sell to the public. So there are just a few questions here, personal. I'd like you to find out.
No, thank you,
Honorable
Kamele. It's a good.
Thank you for the question. Okay, maybe I'll try and start at the beginning and work through. In terms of the levels of poverty, and as a country, are we doing the right thing? It's a difficult question. I don't want to claim to have all the answers. I'll talk from... So maybe give part of the answer. In terms of what we're doing as IDC, we are putting in money which does make a difference in terms of people's lives, but we're just a small piece of the puzzle. I mean, there's a lot of money we are putting in. When we talk, you asked firstly about the statistics and the number of people. In fact, what we do when we talk about number of jobs, we try and define it very narrowly, and you're asking for a broader definition, because we only count the jobs that are created directly from the investment that we are supporting. And the reason we do that is because we're worried about claiming benefit for things which we can't prove. But the reality is that for each business that we support, we know that depending on the region, each person that gets employed supports the family or supports an extended family. And we know that upstream and downstream of that investment, there's suppliers and there's clients who set up businesses as well. What we can try and do, maybe as you suggested, maybe for the next presentation, is try and give an idea of the wider impact. But in some respects, the real challenge of the economy is a lot wider than us. And I'm getting now into economist space. But we need to make sure as government that we need to make sure that there is industrial financing, so that's the role that we play. But we also need to make sure as the industrial financing is targeted at the areas which can make a big difference. So that is one of our challenges which we need to continuously try and improve on. Then there's other things which as a government we need to make sure are in place, and there was a mention of infrastructure. So the infrastructure needs to be there. We need to have the right supporting legislation. One of the things the problem is that there's no easy answers. For example, one of the things which makes it difficult for us to do more investments or do some of the investments we would like is environmental legislation and the long environmental impact assessments. But if you don't have the legislation, then there's a cost in terms of the environment. So there are a number of things which can be done in terms of the policy, the legislation. Let me give you another example, in fact, something can be done and something has been done to some extent. I was talking about the forestry, planting new forests. Now, we could throw as much money as we want at it, but the problem has been, or one of the main problems has been, businesses couldn't get water licenses to plant trees. And it took years to get a water license. So there are some of those types of constraints. Now, that particular issue, in fact, we've been engaging with economic development and DTI. They've been engaging with water affairs and so on. And that process, in fact, has improved. So we're starting to see some of those. So I think the challenge is, from my perspective, maybe that as government institutions and as government, we need to cooperate more to try and find, because sometimes IDC tries to do something, someone else tries to do something, but we're not pulling in the same direction always. We're not removing the constraints to support each other to have that type of impact. In terms of clothing and textiles, I can send the statistics through to the committee, but between we are doing a combination of, we have set aside, firstly, no, let me start from, we've got our normal funding for the clothing and textiles industry as we've got for any other sector, for expansions, for new projects. Then we've set aside money specifically at subsidized rate, prime minus 5, to support companies to improve their competitiveness, their processes. We're also managing money on behalf of government, on behalf of DTI, which is looking at setting up clusters, helping companies to invest in capital to improve their competitiveness. We've supported, I don't remember the exact number, but in the order of 200 or 300 companies, clothing and textiles companies that we've supported in the last year, which is, in fact, we are probably now the biggest funder of the clothing and textiles sector in the country. Either IDC funding or the grants that are being funded through us. And most of those are either in KZN or the Western Cape, so a major proportion of it is going into KZN. And what we're seeing, a number of those companies, in fact, in KZN, it's not only clothing. We funded some footwear as well there, as well as some textiles. And we've seen companies are trying to improve the way they operate, to reduce their stocks, to get their efficiencies up and so on. And we're starting to see better cooperation between companies in the sector and the retail sector. It's still early days to say that it succeeded, but we started, like I said, it seems to have stabilized, and people seem to be trying to do the right things. But in terms of the number of companies in KZN, we can send those stats through.
I have some names of companies which I can just mention quickly to you in KZN. Just for approval, so last year, Zorbatex, it was South African Fiber, Yarn Rux Limited, Asculon Trading, Dick Whittington Shoes, Sapling Trade and Invest, Kingsgate Clothing. So I can go on like that. There's quite a number of these investments.
But if I can suggest, you can send the overall stats, and you mentioned you'd like to visit some, I don't know if that's a committee or you specifically, but we can try and arrange something like that. Because in fact, that's a very interesting sector at the moment, because it's under threat, and it could be in the middle of repositioning itself because of government involvement. Sorry, let me just make a note of that.
I may.
On tourism, okay, I didn't really talk about that. Apologies for that. I tried to pick a few strategies. The tourism, that's another sector where we've actually been repositioning our approach. So in the past, we were focused on putting up hotels, creating accommodation. A lot of that tended to be in the cities, although somewhere outside. We've changed our strategy to say that we want to create destinations, and we want to create those destinations in underdeveloped areas. So, for example, let me use a few different examples. In KZN, we're looking at setting up a beach resort outside of the developed areas. In the Northern Cape, we're looking at working with the government there to try and, it's part of the provincial strategy to make the province a destination for adventure and sports tourism. We want to strengthen Mpumalanga as a destination to try and make sure that both the attractions and the accommodation, and there's a whole package created. So it's a different strategic approach we're taking. And it's something that we've started working on. It's going to take a bit of time to start seeing the results of that. On solar water heaters, I don't know specifically about the one in Pretoria, but the ones that we are involved with, where we involved with an installation, we either require them to have a certain local content, or we encourage them, support them to move towards it. But where we're involved with a distributor of solar water heaters, we won't fund an importer, we're only supporting people who are producing locally. So the major company that the one I used as an example, where the bulk of our involvement has been, it's a company that started off with no manufacturing locally, then they moved into making the collector plates, then the boilers, they're currently producing something like 70 to 80% of the solar water heater locally. There's some things like vacuum tubes where it just isn't viable to do it in South Africa because you need such a large scale. But the companies that we are involved with, so there are a number of companies which are importing, but we are supporting the local production. PPPs on hospitals, I put that down as a future strategy. We've worked with government on one PPP. I think it's in the eastern side, Limpopo. Okay. But we're seeing the opportunity with the NHI coming in, that there's going to be a major need for investment in hospitals. We've engaged with the ministry. Currently, we don't have any specific investments on our cards. It's more plan. As the Department of Health rolls out its plans, we want to then roll out our plans in parallel to say how can we work together to have that. Because we know that there's a massive need. Government resources are limited. We need to bring in the private sector, and IDC has some of those skills to work with the private sector. So that is the thinking. In terms of clean stoves, I'm aware there have been a number of government programs rolled them out, and there have been challenges in terms of their usage. We are starting from somewhere different. So we're not taking exactly the same approach. We're approaching it from an industrialization perspective. So we're working with the private sector companies to try and say, what can we manufacture locally, and can we come up with a commercial-driven plan, as opposed to saying, let's distribute stores, which the previous government initiatives have been. Now, to make it work, we might need to tie up with some of those initiatives. We're currently engaging with some companies, exploring different technologies and so on. We haven't at this stage made an investment decision on a plant. As I mentioned, most of these things I'm talking here, we're presenting our plans going forward, and we're trying to be proactive in helping to develop. So we've started testing one or two stores, and we're working with at least one manufacturer to try and see, can we develop a viable plan to roll it out. In terms of donors, there is a danger. Let me start by acknowledging that. What we try to do as, firstly, and maybe that's an advantage of being partly a government-owned agency, but also one that operates independently. I think it helps us in terms of raising some of these funds, having that government relationship. But when we borrow money, we don't do it on the back of government. So we don't get any treasury guarantees, we don't get any commitments by the South African government to that foreign country. It's purely done as an institution-to-institution transaction. We try to define, we've been raising money for a number of years, I mean, for most of our existence. We've traditionally been borrowing mainly from the Western countries. What's changed is we've started looking to China, India, and so on to explore borrowing funds from them. But the other thing, when I talk about our focus for cheaper funding, let me use, for example, the CDB and the KfW as examples, because those are... We wanted long-term funding. We approached not only CDB, we approached other institutions around the world, and we said this is what we're looking for. With CDB, it's taken us about 2 years. And this is a straightforward funding agreement, which normally can be is a matter of months. It's taken us 2 years to negotiate it. And a lot of that was because we wanted to make sure that the terms were what suited us. Well, obviously, they wanted to make sure the terms were what suited them. And we wouldn't accept funding where the terms put unnecessary constraints. On the CDB facility, there are some of the constraints which they've put in there. For example, one of the things that CDB asked us for was a guarantee from the South African government, which we said no to. There were some other terms which we said, which we weren't happy with. But where we agreed on one of their terms, which was met with one of our requirements, was that one of the main targets of the funding is small and medium enterprises. So some of the terms, and then they can claim credit for supporting small and medium enterprises, but it's something we want to do as well. So it's very much, we are extremely careful not to accept any constraints which would make it difficult for us to do our work. And we also don't, as an institution, make commitments on behalf of government. On the agriculture, Grian is a better place than me to talk to that.
We fund the agro-processing and the land bank primary agriculture. But if you need to be strategic in dealing with agro-processing, because quite often we will not be able to fund a maize farmer, but we can provide funding for a milling activity. And if we can create these processing hubs all over South Africa, we realize that we can utilize those processors to provide access to market skills as well as finance through those processors. So we cannot de-link, unfortunately, the two. I mean, just a good example is, for instance, in the KZN province, a mill close to Stanga, which are experiencing problems with throughput, and there were some droughts, and there were some problems with land claims. So we've assisted the processor, and that processor utilized those funds to assist the farmers, and we actually provide extension support mechanisms through our support through the processor. So what we're trying to develop is a sustainable solution through processing to farmers, although we might not fund the maize farmer for its crop finance, it might be the land bank.
In terms of the buses, you're correct, the buses for the World Cup came from Brazil. Even some of the city bus networks that they're rolling out are coming from Brazil. We do have some assembly plants locally, bus bodies, not necessarily making the engines and so on. We don't have sufficient investment in plant in South Africa. We need more. And that's what we'd like to do. I mentioned earlier about we need to work together as government institutions. One of the big challenges with procurement, and it's not only the municipalities, but it becomes even more complicated when you start talking municipalities. Everyone does their own procurement. Everyone decides on their procurement when they need something, they place the order. What that means is if you want to set up a plant, you need sufficient quantities, which might not be, one municipality might not be enough. you need to have enough time to plan so that you can, if the order is to supply in 6 months, you can't set up a plant, get the expertise in that 6 month period. So we are looking at, from outside, trying to set up a plant. We're engaging with the DTI and so on about trying to say, and through things like the Preferential Procurement Act, where there's where a designation has come in, to look at, can we move towards things like designation for buses? One of the questions which needs to be answered, us as a country, how can we better coordinate our procurement? And what makes it challenging, there are different responsibilities. So it's not as easy as it sounds, but if we can make it work, it can have a big impact. So we're engaging with other parties to try and see how can we, and IDC's focus area would be trying to attract the right investors and trying to invest in the plant, setting it up. And we're engaging with others to try and see, can there be a coordinated plan around it. But currently, to put it simply, we don't have the capacity in the country at the moment to meet all our needs. The forests in rural areas, in fact, the approach I was talking about is exactly communities. We are not talking about Mondi at all. We are not talking about Sapi or Mondi, except to one extent. What we're trying to do is, we are trying to identify communities who either own land or have access to land, who have an interest in agriculture and in forestry specifically, and we are working with them to set up typically a community trust, which will then own the business. Where there is a role for organizations like Mondi and so on, is what we want to do is try and, where possible, because we want that offtake, we want the technical support and so on. So we try and find a partner. So if it is Mondi, then Mondi would then give an offtake agreement. They would provide technical assistance for, let's say, the first 5 years, because it's a long-term project. So it's very targeted at the local communities. The sharehold would be by the local communities. We want the employment, the benefits to flow into those communities. It makes, like I said, it makes it more difficult to get these off the ground, but that's, as you rightly say, that's where the real need is. Mondi, in fact, they don't come to us for funding. Some large companies do, but others, they can just go to a bank and get the money. And they've got the expertise. On the cotton, in fact, I think your comment is correct. Maybe I should have phrased it as, we need to strengthen or use our relative strengths to develop an advantage. And I think that is the core. But I would argue that there is also a beneficiation opportunity for us. Because one of the mistakes that we, as IDC and maybe as a country as well, have made at times, is we see ourselves as South Africa as something special, and our partners are the UK and France and Germany, and we want to export to them and deal with them. That world has changed. We need to be talking in terms of, we are part of Africa, we are part of BRICS, we are part of, and then we need to start asking the question, if we take that approach, maybe there are some things we can accept, that maybe we can grow cotton in South Africa, and maybe we can grow it in Zimbabwe. It grows better in Zimbabwe than it does in South Africa. If we try and spin the cotton grown in South Africa here, locally, we won't be able to compete with Bangladesh. If we spin cotton grown in Zimbabwe, maybe we can. I don't know, but maybe we can. So that's the type of question we're asking ourselves. So it's not, there is a selfish element of it, looking to ourselves, but there's also an element, as you rightly say, we should be saying, how can we develop Zimbabwe? If they are strong, we are stronger. They buy other things from us. So this approach that we want to take going forward is very much a cooperative approach. And it will have, the reality is, it could have some negative impact. Because clothing, as we know, one of the things which has impacted on the local clothing industry is that some of our manufacturers have moved to Lesotho and Swaziland. So it already is impacting on us negatively. There is that risk that it will, of the strategy. But if we can think of it in such a way that we always try to see, while we develop them, we should always look to see how can we also develop ourselves or benefit ourselves. And that's going to be the challenge we're going to have to face in trying to roll this out. In terms of the identifying key areas of strength in African countries, the point is well taken, and in fact that is part of our thinking. We haven't done that as it stands. But if we're going to start taking the type of strategy that I'm talking about, then we need to say, in the past what we've done as IDC is almost ad hoc investments. We get an application from this country, does it make sense, we assess it, and then we invest. What we want to move towards is saying, what are these value chains? So, and for that we need to understand which countries are strong at what. And we also need to understand what does South Africa need, and how can we marry those two things together. So it's a process that we're starting during this year.
If I can just mention too, the cassava starch that we're growing in Swaziland to replace the imports from Thailand, and we'll utilize it specifically in the Richards Bay area for the paper industry as such, so across borders.
Maybe on the next question, in fact, maybe I must apologize in terms of the Northern Cape and the levels of investment in the Northern Cape. I didn't make it clear enough in my presentation. The graph, firstly, let me start by saying, because there's a question, are we talking real money or is that planned? That is actually real money invested. But what the graph is showing is not the length of that, it's showing in relative terms. So when you talk about off a low base, that's exactly what this graph is showing. So the Northern Cape, if you talk in rand terms, we do invest a lot and I'll show you the exact rand figures just now. I've got it in the other slide. We are investing more in rand terms in Gauteng than in the Northern Cape. But Gauteng is a big economy. In fact, most of the banks would be investing a lot more in the Northern Cape in relative terms, relative to, as in Gauteng, relative to Northern Cape. So this is relative to the provincial GDP. So maybe let's just go to the other end. Yeah. So if you look at what we're investing in the Northern Cape, it is a large amount of money. I mean, 8 billion rand in the last 10 years, 3.5 in the last year. But if you look at Mpumalanga, it's about 4 billion rand. If you look at KZN, it's about 6.5 or close. In fact, KZN in the last year is actually looking bad, and maybe I must explain that. What we do, firstly you have these cycles on an annual basis. But when we approve funds into something, sometimes some of these things don't go ahead for some reason. Something goes wrong before it can be implemented, or sometimes the investment goes ahead before our money, but with another funder. So we help develop it, and then it goes ahead without our money going in. So what we do then is we actually subtract that from our... So it's a way we calculate. So that 85 million rand isn't the actual real number for last year. We don't want to claim credit as in total for more than we've done. So we've actually subtracted some money that we invested previously. If you look at the Northwest, we've invested about 8 billion rand, in Limpopo over 5 billion. So the Northern Cape is one of the bigger areas, and the reasons for that, Rian can talk to some of the reasons for that.
We have done quite a number of investments in the Northern Cape on the agricultural side by developing the black spot free citrus industry in the Northern Cape. I think the biggest exposure in the last year came through our investment through flood relief, which I perhaps just can talk about as well at this moment. I'll deal with that later on.
You can talk to it now, but there was also, just on that point before we move off, there was a big mining investment in the Northern Cape as well, and the solar investments in the Northern Cape. So there are real investments.
Perhaps it might be interesting to note that Northern Cape, it's 8 billion and 3.5 billion, and if you look northwest, it's also around 8 and 3.5. So it's similar amounts, but in this graph, they look significantly different, purely because the GDP level is so much different.
Can you tell us the reason for Free State has got the least investment? Why?
I think it's something where it's not something new. In fact, it's something that's been throughout IDC's history. A large proportion of the economy in the Free State is agriculture based, and a lot of it is cash crop based. So there isn't so the fit with our industrial focus hasn't been that good. Having said that, we need to try and find ways to invest more in the Free State, because there are opportunities, and the growth that we're looking at, for example, in agro-processing. Then if going forward, if some of the presidential projects in terms of creating the, and a provincial project, because we've been engaging with the province as well in terms of trying to improve this, is to the making it a logistics hub and looking at the logistics corridor. Now, hopefully some of those things will help unlock value. So it's an area that we know we need to improve, but the historical reason is that the type of economy that's there, we haven't really found the right opportunities to match our focus areas. The other area where we can look for, or we are looking for potential new investments or trying to grow our involvement, is in tourism. So there's a few sectors where we've identified where we think there could be opportunities, and we are going to be trying to improve on the Free State going forward.
I think the agriculture will remain very important there. In the past, it was mainly cash crop farming area, and it was typically not the area that we've invested, but we realize now cash crop farmers also have the challenge. They need to add value. They need to have alternative crops, because maize is not always the solution. So for value addition, we're looking at poultry abattoirs and processing. And on the import replacement side, we specifically busy with projects on soya import replacement. So there's a value adding so that we don't import soya oil anymore.
In terms of the branch offices, we do try to monitor them. We get regular reports. We try and follow up. There's also, depending on which sector they're working with, we try and get the business unit or the, for example, agro industries would work closely with the regional office on the agro industries related business plan. If there are areas of improvement in any of the specific branch offices, or if there are any complaints, so please let us know, and then we can follow up and we can try and improve on areas where there are weaknesses. In terms of the areas in which we have it, one of the things we need to be mindful of is finding the right balance. We need to make sure that we try and make ourselves as accessible as possible. On the other hand, if we open offices all over, it adds significantly to our costs, which makes it difficult to operate as well. and which is where the approach I was talking about, trying to cooperate with other institutions. But also, what we've been doing is we've started off with each province in terms of the areas. We started off with one office, which typically would be the area with the most economic activity. And then we said, fine, now, once we've got that set up, then let's identify an area far enough away from there where there is potential for economic activity so that we can reach more people. And areas where there isn't enough activity to sustain an office, we say, but we need to then at least go and visit them on a regular basis, or we need to have a relationship with a local organization to help in terms of access. In terms of the solar water heating program, we work through private sector companies, so they would tend to quote for certain areas. The companies that we've been involved with on the more expensive, the high pressure end, those tend to focus on the cities because those are the people who can pay for it, but that's relatively small. The bulk of the investment that we've made, in fact, it started off we supported a company to expand in the Eastern Cape initially. They've now rolled out into KZN. They are in the process of expanding around the country. So the plan is to move to all areas of the country. What we also want to do, I mean, like I said, it's been largely on the low-cost side. The bulk of our involvement has been helping to develop one strong company with a local manufacturing base. What we also want to do going forward is make sure that we support other players as well, and to try and make sure that it is spread around the country. In terms of the specific regions, I wouldn't have the information in terms of the plans exactly when they're looking at the different regions. But I know that there is a plan to try and roll out across the country. One of the things which there is an opportunity for, because all the provinces and a number of the municipalities have low-cost housing programs, and sometimes what tends to happen is particular municipalities or provinces make contact. Like I said, we don't roll it out ourselves, it's through companies, but then they make contact with the solar water heater companies, and I mean, I can provide, don't think there'll be a problem with providing the name of the one we deal with, but I mean, it could be anyone, but I'd encourage one that manufactures locally. But to try and, because there is a program in place where Eskom is providing a subsidy. There's only one company at the moment in South Africa which has a carbon credit program, the one that we've worked with, where actually they get benefits from selling carbon internationally. Hopefully we can help other companies to get to that stage. But what works very well with this one company, the way we've structured it together with them, is that using the subsidy from Eskom and using the sale of carbon credits, it can pretty much be put in free for those low-cost houses. So through a partnership with Eskom, the municipality, or whoever's doing the low-cost housing development, and that company that we funded, the challenge is they're growing the capacity currently, so they can't cover the whole country. The Northern Cape, we've spoken about the level of investment. I'm not going to comment on other institutions, if you'll excuse me. I don't think it would be my place to comment on DBSA or NEF or any other institution. But what we do try to do is try and find areas where we can work together and mutually benefit the country and class. In terms of the role of commercial banks, in fact, I haven't spoken to it, but there is a reference to it in our corporate plan as well. That what we see our role as doing, very much in line with the question or the comment, to try and crowd the commercial banks in, to try and fund some of the areas that need to be funded. The commercial banks' primary focus is making a profit for their shareholders. I mean, that is clear. There seems to have been greater, from our perspective, some improvement over the last few years as government has been questioning their approach. They've been trying to show that they are doing something in terms of development. But I don't believe it's, as you say as well, I don't believe it's going as far as meeting the needs. What we try to do when we do an investment, it's very rare that we would fund an investment 100% on our own. At the very early stages, sometimes we're forced to because the banks just won't take the risk. As soon as possible, we start engaging with them, whether it's the commercial banks or the or private equity players or different types of financial investors. And sometimes the solution comes where we take the equity or we take what we call the mezzanine finance or the quasi-equity and they take the straight debt. Or so we try and reduce some of the risk for them to try and draw them in. So if you take, for example, on the renewable industries, the generation, they've done a larger proportion of the debt. We've done a lot of equity as well, and we've done the BE, the community funding for the equity, which they saw as a very high risk, and their returns can't be as high because the way we do it, we're sharing the returns with the community. So we want our money back, but we want value left for the community. And we do try and draw them in as far as possible. As far as guarantees go, in fact, Kula has been taking that sort of an approach of giving guarantees for banks to fund small enterprises. It hasn't worked as well as Kula would have liked. So it's something that's going to have to be relooked. How can it be improved on? We've also been experimenting with that, so mainly on the small business side. So, for example, for things like trucks, where we said small truck operators, we would work with the bank. I think it was Absa in that case. We'd give them a guarantee, but we don't have the capacity to lend to someone who's buying one truck. They've got that network to do that, but we share the risk with them. We've had mixed success. I think there have been some successes and some failures. It's something we'll continue exploring. We're currently, for example, exploring to support our jewelry sector. That's another area I haven't spoken about. One of the challenges that South Africa has compared to some of our competitors in jewelry, some of them have what they call a gold loan scheme. Now, IDC doesn't have gold to lend. Some of the banks have gold or the refineries have gold. But they're not happy to take the risk. So we're looking at maybe giving them some sort of a guarantee to encourage them to take that risk. So that's something we will continue exploring. In terms of CIFA, the Small Enterprise Finance Agency, as from the 1st of April, in terms of the, let's say, legislatively and in terms of the administration, it's now become the SAMAF and Kula have merged. It's become a subsidiary of IDC. The business plan is still in the process of being finalized. Within the next well, by next month, the intention is to have the business plan in place. There has been work going into the business plan over a period. The idea is that it will be doing both wholesale and retail funding. In fact, you mentioned tomorrow's session. In fact, the acting CEO of CIFA will be here tomorrow on the talking at the small. I'll be accompanying him tomorrow, so he'd be in a position. Well, okay, I know it's a different committee or different session, but he will be touching on some of their plans going forward. So it has. So there has been good progress. It is well on track. In terms of capitalization of IDC, and should it be done by government? In fact, the last cash injection to IDC was in early 1950s. There are advantages. There are different funding models used by different DFIs, and they have their advantages and disadvantages. One thing which IDC at the moment, our problem is not necessarily for the plans that we've got. We do have sufficient money for now if we achieve all the things that we would like to achieve. And obviously I can't guarantee we'll achieve them because we're trying to develop new things. And a lot of them won't work. But if we achieve even half of the things that we're trying to achieve, we won't have enough money. And then the question starts coming up is for recapitalization. At this stage, given the types of needs in some countries, and even in South Africa, I mean, organizations like the Land Bank and so on have been recapitalized regularly. Kula gets capitalized on an annual basis and so on. But IDC at this stage, I would say, given some of the other needs in the country, I don't think there's a need to necessarily capitalize us. I think we have got the resources to do what we need to do. Where we're trying in terms of our strategy and together with government is work more cleverly to stretch that money, is through forming government partnerships. So, for example, the URF funding, or managing DTI grants, or economic development grants. Or, as Rian mentioned as an example, there was an innovative settlement from the Competition Commission where the price fixing part of the solution, there was money set aside. IDC is managing those funds to help create competition in the sector. So we're working with different government departments at the moment to try and find innovative ways to get money more cost-effectively into business. For example, I mentioned the manufacturing competitiveness program. So there will be a portion of the funding which will be used, for example, to help subsidize the funding for distressed companies that we fund. But for government to give us a large sum of money, I think it will be difficult to motivate it given some of the other needs we've got in the country. And because we don't have that pressing need. On the view that infrastructure won't necessarily resolve South Africa's challenges, I think I spoke to a similar type of comment. I don't think there's one magic bullet for us as a country. It's going to be hard work for all of us. And, I mean, we at IDC have to recognize, we have to play our part. This infrastructure has to come in. There's the right legislation. The private sector has to come to the party. Labor has to come to the party. It's communities. It's the way we approach things. It's also the way our foreign affairs works and how we interact with other countries. I was talking about the Africa strategy. I don't think infrastructure is a magic bullet, but I also think if we don't have the infrastructure, we won't be able to do it. So I'm extremely, or we as IDC are extremely pleased with the focus being put on infrastructure, because it's been making it challenging to achieve what we need to achieve as a corporation and as a country, but on its own it won't resolve all our problems. There's areas like education where we need to improve as well. So there's, I don't think infrastructure is a magic bullet, but it's necessary. In terms of IDZs and SEZs, where there have been IDZs set up, in fact, part of what we do, both from a pricing mechanism and when we try and target investments, we do look at the IDZs, we look at development corridors and so on, so we are supportive of those initiatives. We, on the Upington Solar Park specifically, we have been involved with engagement around its development. We will, as the SEZ legislation is in place, proposals have started coming through to government. As that develops, we do foresee that we will play a role, and we will try to support the relevant clusters of business as they set up in those areas. Terms of operationalization, beneficiation at port source versus port, maybe I'll ask Rian to talk maybe a bit more about that. I just want to give one, but the one example, in fact, which is mentioned in the corporate plan, or one of them, the manganese. In fact, we are doing both. We're setting up a sinter plant in the Northern Cape, and we're setting up exploring the possibility of a smelter in Kuha. So there is a degree of beneficiation that we're looking at source and at the port.
Yeah, I think every project that we involve in, we do a very good logistics study to go and determine the optimal point of processing. I know, for instance, in the Northern Cape, they had the Hoodia, where they wanted to process it first in Abington, and then further go and make the product somewhere in the Western Cape. So we're trying to in each case, do that. In agriculture, it's quite often necessary to start up building up your raw material first before you go and put up your processing facility. Because quite often it doesn't make sense to go and just build the abattoir there, because it needs to be profitable in terms of its volume throughput. So you start with a livestock massification program, and then you might then sell at that point in time livestock outside a specific area. But if you have adequate volumes, then you go and build and utilize the infrastructure. So it needs to be a phased approach. I agree. We need to export the value-added product from the specific product, the province. The disaster funds, we had loans that we've approved, and at this point in time, we have dispersed around 180 million rand to 125. Farmers specifically in the Northern Cape via our land bank loan, as well as the GWK. GWK stood in at some point in time for land bank, but I'm glad to say that the funds are flowing. I think we had another drawdown this week again on it. So hopefully that mechanism is working, and we've approved now funding for the ostrich farmers in the Southern Cape as well, which is from that disaster pool of funds. To assist them.
In terms of should we be in mining? Over IDC's existence, I mean, the question of what is industrialization has come up from time to time. And in fact, so the same question, in fact, has come up around mining, agriculture, tourism, media. Is it our core business? Should we be? How do we define industrialization? I'd like to answer it in two ways. Firstly, in a broad way, the view was taken a while ago that when we talk industrialization, it's in the broad definition of industrialization, not the narrow definition which talks to manufacturing. So we do So we do get involved with a range of different industries. But I think the question, to answer the question differently, I think the question is still relevant in terms of, should our focus be mining per se in terms of extracting value now, or should our focus be on building the industries related to it? I want to answer that together with your question about the small mining entities, because I want to use that as an example. We got into mining firstly because there was a need for investment in the sector at a time when the commercial banks weren't prepared to make those types of investments. Now, obviously, our financial markets have changed. There's more readiness to invest. It does change from time to time, and it's been difficult recently. So our role maybe doesn't have the same type of importance that it once had. There's still some areas where people struggle to get finance in mining, and in particular, that is some of the junior mining entities. In particular, when they are relatively early stage of development. So when they want to do some exploration and prove a reserve, and they're still finding it hard to raise funding currently, and we are seeing a role for IDC to play at the moment. And if that changes, maybe we'll move away, or so we do move in and out of industries depending on the extent of need. But there's another reason why we want to keep an involvement currently in the mining area. And that's exactly related to the industrialization or the beneficiation side. We want to increasingly move from this, and let me give you an example of something directly relating to your question, something which you've made, just a recent investment we've made. We made a recent substantial investment into PMG, Platinum Metal Group investment, which is currently a mine, or the development of a new mine. It's an equity investment which the banks I think would have looked at some debt, but it's still relatively early stage. The desire was to do it by equity. It's a partnership between technical companies and the local community. But one of the things besides that is interested us about it is that it's going to be of the scale that makes it worthwhile to explore putting up a smelter, which can, and as part of our agreement with the promoters, we'll jointly explore the development of it's also a long, cold day for me. Part of the thinking there, this will be of a scale so that you've got at least enough to get a critical mass for the refinery. But the intention is that to build a refinery on the scale that it can then serve to process for the junior miners. So we're still investing in mining, but with the intention, the main reason, is to try and increasingly develop the downstream. So we're not moving away, we're not stopping the investment there, but it's a different focus in terms of our strategy. In terms of our borrowing in capital markets, our international borrowing is, if you translate it into rand terms, it comes it's slightly below the South African prime rate, but that's after you take into account our hedging costs and so on. But in terms of the return on equity that we require, the return on equity or even our pricing for our debt and our specific equity investments, we actually have developed models where we look at a combination. So we look at the risk, we look at the development impacts, we look at where is it located. Is it located, for example, in an IDZ? how many jobs will it create? So we look at a number of different things. And we look at, so then we look at a combination of the risk and the development impact to actually price the transaction. On our loans, like I said, in fact, we often do get criticized, I know, for being expensive, but like I said, we actually don't make money on our loans. Because we are pricing for a high-risk transaction, we price lower than the banks. For a low-risk transaction, I mean, we can't compete with the banks. Because they get they borrow their money from the deposits that we put in the bank, in which they give us virtually nothing. So we can't compete on that. But for a small and medium enterprise or even a large company in a risk area, they can't access the cheap money from the bank. I mean, then we start becoming cheaper than them. Because we're not relying on security, we take that risk profile. So we don't put as big a markup on our borrowers.
Okay. Thank you.
I've just neglected the project in the Northern Cape. We will send that list through. And just the one thing, if a project fails, we have a specific approach that we don't just try to close it down. We try to see what we can do to maintain the jobs. Such, for instance, we have, for instance, a pistachio project in the Northern Cape, which failed. But we didn't just neglect that piece. We've developed a new project plan to develop a pecan farm and provide processing facilities for the area as such. So we continuously try to not only create new capacity, but also maintain and protect it.
So, members, it is now 12:49. There's a sitting starting at 1400 hours. Some of you are debating in that, I think. As all your questions being covered, Honourable Sinclair, the Northern Cape are so well, I mean, monies are so well spent in the Northern Cape, that I think you must be the most luckiest guy in this room. But let me hear you.
Jay, with due respect, I think that graph about the investment in the Northern Cape and the GDP is a bit misleading, to say the least. And I request that we rather withdraw it from the presentation, you know, and put it there in the Goodman Gallery where people can do with it what they want to do with it and so on. You know. But, Jay, no, you see, I focus a lot on the Northern Cape. I love South Africa, but I actually love the Northern Cape more because the reality is, as a strategic instrument, the IDC must use the rural provinces to build the economy. That is the reality, and I think the Northern Cape naturally has got a lot of potential and so on. But of concern to me, Chairperson, is if I hear some of the plans that's been raised in terms of this tourism, extreme tourism, and so on and so forth. You know, with due respect, I don't believe in that gimmick. They don't create jobs. They might be short-lived, give us a bit of exposure in America, like the skateboards, this, and the bullet car that's coming, and all those nonsense. But those things don't give sustainable job opportunities. There's other entities that deal with those gimmicks. Let's use the IDC to create sustainable jobs. That is my plea. The last issue is, Chair, nowhere did I hear of any application and support for the SKA that's coming to the Northern Cape. And certainly in terms of the localization, that's one of the issues, that some of those equipment that will be used must be built locally. Then we create wealth, and then we address the issue about unemployment and job business.
I think that some of your questions or the issues that you've raised, Mr. Meir and Mr. Kutsia can respond in writing to the committee or to the committee secretary. Honourable Ngoni, that's fine. Are you happy? Matihali, are you happy with your Honourable Adams? Honourable Sinclair, you have your bite of the cherry, Baba Kamere? Okay. Mr. Meir and Mr. Could you say any last parting words from your side?
Just want to thank the committee once again for the opportunity to present. It's always intimidating to get so many questions, but it also makes us feel valued, even if the questions are probing. It shows that there is an appreciation of what we are trying to do. So thank you once again.
Baba Mkosi?
Thank you, Chair. I think maybe the big point of the discussion is that there's a lot of things we're doing, and in the lot of things we're doing is the impact of all the things that are being done in different places that we may not actually have got to make impact or make the difference in terms of the challenges we face as a country. That's one point. But the final point on the SKA, on the strategic integrated projects at the level of the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission, it has been given some attention. We hope it may be easier through that process to have a program that will benefit the Northern Cape particularly, because it's quite a big one. The point that it was successfully actually bidded on as a country, although there's partnership with Australia, we think it will have beneficial effect in terms of change and development. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Williams?
Thank you, Chair. I was going to make the point that that Mr. Causey made on SCAF. But in having made that, I think we'll leave it there. But provision is being made for that, or has been made. Thank you, Chair.
Jackie, is it? Yes. HSRC. You're fine. HSRC is fine. Good. Any last words from your side?
Nothing from my side. Also, just thank you for being able to present here.
Don't forget our appointment, Mr. Katsir. With that in mind, members, I think that we should engage the IDC more. As you could see, that there's quite a lot of questions that we had. Mr. Mir, yes, definitely we will engage you more on. Even when we go on our oversight, we will visit these regional and satellite offices to engage with them and find out how they can be of assistance to the provinces and what they are doing in that. With that in, with nothing burning that can't, that you don't want to put on the table, and I hope that you won't be on the Brett Murray line, Honourable Sinclair. This meeting stands adjourned. Thank you very much.